As we get started, I want to say if you are with us and you are not a Christian, we are so glad that you've chosen to come here. What I might have to say today might sound very weird, bizarre, eccentric, and I just want to say, if that's the case, we're still glad you're here. You don't have to listen. If it sounds like hogwash or whatever, maybe it is, but we just want you to know that we're glad you're here. If you are a Christian, however, and what I say sounds bizarre, weird, eccentric, that's okay. It might be. You don't have to listen either. It is a quirky message today, and we're just going to see what happens with it. But again, you know, if you think it sounds a little weird, cool. We're still glad you're here. I'm gonna make an excuse. This last week, I started writing early in the week, and then I got stomach flu. Oh, yeah. And so then I finished later, so that's probably why it's weird, okay? All right. Last Sunday, my wife, Jenny, who does these Bible reading plans where people from the congregation are invited to attend, started one that's a few week long. It's called Hearing God. It goes in conjunction with this series. It's inspired by the book Hearing God by Dallas Willard. And so she's created a plan for a few weeks to go along with this series, and people who accept it can come in and read together and see other people's comments. Anyway, in one of the first lessons, there was a little recap of a story from the book. And the story goes something like this. Dallas Willard was young. He was at a church. The pastor stood up and said that God had been speaking to him about building a new sanctuary. And there was some excitement about that. Is that okay, Roger, if I tell what God's been telling me about new sanctuary? Just kidding. Anyway, they're at home afterwards having lunch, discussing the sermon, and his wife's grandma, who they called Mima, said this. She'd been a Christian for a long time, and her comment was, "I wonder why God never spoke to me like this." And I think that's a good question. I wonder why God never speaks to me like that. So that week, too, one of the guys in our group commented. And the comment was, "I stand with Mima." I will add that some 25 years ago, during a pastor search, I believe that he spoke to me twice. Since then, no voice. So some of you may be more like Mima than the other guy. Mima said, I've never heard that, or I wonder why God never speaks to me like that. Or the other comment, kind of, I wonder why God never speaks to me like that, except for two times 25 years ago. And maybe some of you are wondering, like, what is that story? And anyway, this week, again, so weird, so quirky. I was reading Hearing God, preparing for this book, Hearing God, and there's a story about here, this guy. It was Dallas Willard's older brother, and he's preparing to, thinking maybe he's going to be a pastor, and he has kind of a vision-like, or he senses God speaking to him, and the words that were spoken to him were the exact same words that this guy from 25 years ago was talking about, and those words are, "Feed my sheep." So, quick story here. The guy who made those comments, God spoke to me about 25 years ago, pastoral search team, and those words were, "Feed my sheep." So once I read that story, I was like, oh, there it is again. I got to call him. His name's Paul Cox. He was looking for a pastor in Frankfort, Indiana, at Kelly Crossing Church of God, that eventually led to me being a senior pastor there. So I called Paul, and I wanted to hear his story. And it was as simple as this. One time he was praying, trying to figure out, like, God, who should we, like, please lead us to a pastor, help us to find a pastor, all that stuff. And then he just sensed that God said to him, "Feed my sheep." He didn't really understand it, but he felt some clarity. He really believed God had told him that. Fast forward days later, weeks later, I don't know. But he's in his kitchen making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I kid you not. Peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and he senses God saying, "Feed my sheep." He wondered what it meant. He talked to some people. They thought, "Eh, maybe you're supposed to be the pastor." He's like, "I don't think so." But those were the two things that he's talking about. Feed my sheep a couple of times. So what he's talking about, that line, feed my sheep, it's a reference to a story told by Jesus's close disciple, John. Jesus had a kind of inner circle of three guys who were especially close to them, him, Peter, John, and Mark. Peter, John, and James. And anyway, John writes this story in John 21. And what's happened is that Jesus is arrested, and then Peter and the other disciples flee. Jesus put on trial, and Peter gets up there, and where Jesus needed his disciples the most, Peter failed the worst. And even three times, he didn't stand up, he didn't do anything to help, he listened, and he denied three times that he knew Jesus. And then that was the last time he saw Jesus. Jesus died, and the last thing between him was bad. And I think Peter was kind of haunted by that. But then, fortunately, Jesus did something that only Jesus did, and he came back from the dead, resurrected. And then after that, Peter went out, he kind of returned to his old life. He was a fisherman, so he went out on the lake, and he went fishing. And then we have this story in John 21 where Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, mysteriously appears on the shore of the beach there, and he's cooking. And he calls out to the disciples. They hadn't caught anything all night. He tells them to throw their nets on the other side. They catch a lot, a fish. They realize it's Jesus. Peter swims into the shore to see Jesus. He has a breakfast with them of bread and fish. And then Jesus talks with Peter, who'd failed three times, and three times said, "Hey, do you love me?" And he tells him, "Feed my sheep." That's where that comes from. Feed my sheep. Jesus to Peter. Resurrected Jesus to Peter. All right. So again, I told you it's a little weird today. Let's show a picture. This is me when I was 20 years old. Aw, aren't I cute? Yeah. Which one am I? Do you know? The one that looks like Caleb. Caleb with darker hair. All right, so I'm the one in the middle. Is that not the one? Which one did you think it was, Peggy? Okay, you thought, that's my brother. Okay, that's my brother. I guess my brother looks like Caleb. So my brother's on my left. We're close together, arms around each other. Across from me is my cousin. And in between us is a mosaic. You can't really probably see it very well, but it's this famous mosaic. It's of bread and fish. And this mosaic is near a place off the Sea of Galilee, off the shore. So what happened was I was a 20-year-old. I just finished my junior year of college. I thought I was going to be a pastor. I got an internship at a church, and it turned out I was really bad at ministry. So I was like, oh, like, have I wasted 3 years? This is not going well. But fortunately, I got an interruption. My family had planned this once-in-a-lifetime trip to Israel. So I got to leave my misery of failed church work to go with my family to Israel, which was just, again, crazy, crazy sort of thing that happened. So we go to this place, and this is this mosaic here. There's a little chapel, and it's near a site where, kind of near where Jesus fed the 5,000, but also where this story from John 21 happened. And so what happened with me while I was there, again, I was feeling, I don't know where the future's going, I'm not good at this thing, we were out at the Sea of Galilee, and I just kind of pictured this scene. John 21, boat, Jesus on the shore at dawn, and then Peter coming in, and then as I was picturing everything that was happening, when I got to the point where Jesus said to Peter, "Feed my sheep," I got very emotional. And I just wept. And I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but for me in that moment, what it meant to me was the Lord looking at me saying, "Hey, I know just like Peter, you don't feel qualified. You're called. It's about you're called feed my sheep. It's not about how good you are or how bad you are or whatever. Feed my sheep. So for me, it was like an affirmation of my calling. So when Paul Cox, the guy at the search committee, told me those words, that God had told him, feed my sheep, it seemed like something important to me. So today, as we, again, kind of process maybe some strange things that we hear, I want to look at a few things that Jesus said about his voice. And today we're going to really focus on words written by John, because John, that guy who wrote the Gospel of John, knew Jesus' voice about as well as anybody else did. Peter wrote a few other books, so he may have known Jesus' voice maybe a little better about as well. But of the gospel writers, surely John knew Jesus' human voice the best. So let's go to John 16:13. This is what John is quoting. John's the only one who quotes this comment from Jesus. Jesus says this, "But when he, the Spirit of truth, comes, he will guide you into all truth. He will not speak on his own. He will speak only what he hears." Jesus, this is so, I think, important. It's so good. When Jesus talks about the Spirit, he talks about truth. Now, if you kind of wonder the same thing, like, I wonder why God never speaks to me like that, it doesn't show that there's anything wrong with you, I don't think. I think what it just shows is that you have some intellectual honesty. And honesty is a really, really good thing. Truth is never on the other side of Jesus, according to what Jesus says. One of the reasons why I think I get skeptical when I hear people say, or God told me, or God speaking to people, is because I've just heard all kinds of people lie about it. And that it gets so confusing. People use it as a trump card. People use it as a way to get them to do what you want. So I've just heard, I'm skeptical about God speaking sometimes because of all the lies that happen with this. And it's there. For example, in 2010, there was a book that came out that was called The Boy Who Came Back from Heaven, a true story. It was a story about a little boy who was 6 years old. He got in a car accident with his father, was in a coma, and then experienced heaven and came back to tell about it. So the only problem with that book was, and they made a movie, sold millions of copies, Christian bestseller, all those kind of things. The only problem with it wasn't true. Later, the boy came back as an adult, or as an older teenager. One of the things that he said, to his credit, is, "I did not die. I did not go to heaven." He said that he was doing it to like get attention, and he got lots of attention. But then he said, saying, "Hey, just so you know, this wasn't true. All these things that were said about what God said or God did, it didn't happen." But he said, "People have profited from lies and continue to." Man, what a wise comment. People profit from lies and continue to. Lies can sell books. Lies can gain followers. Lies can increase attendance. Lies can win elections. And Jesus was no stranger to this kind of world. He was no stranger to lies. And people will use God too and be part of the lies that just manipulate, or they profit from them. One thing to kind of point out about the disciples is a lot of times when people are telling lies, they make themselves look good. The disciples, the things they said about Jesus, almost always made them look bad. And I think that's one thing to pay attention to. But anyway, Jesus was no stranger to lies. Lies in the political world or lies in the religious world, because a lot of times they're interacting. And Jesus had some enemies. The religious authorities of his day were people who would lie to protect their institution. In fact, when he got arrested, they fabricated things. They tried to find people who would tell lies to you. And they wanted to be able to use it against him because they were envious of him and threatened by him. They wanted to protect what they had. They wanted to profit from Jesus, getting Jesus out of the way. And so they collaborated with the Roman government because they didn't have the authority to do so. So they met with a guy named Pontius Pilate. He had the authority to do so. So this is where religious power and political power meet. And Pilate can see right through these guys. He knows that this is not about truth. A lot of times people can be real sanctimonious about truth or whatever. He could see right through them and knew it wasn't about Jesus's what they were saying. It was about something else. And they have this conversation. And I want to go to the end of the conversation as John records it in 1837. Jesus answered, this is what he says to Pilate. Everyone on the side of the truth listens to me. What is truth? Retorted Pilate. Pilate was so cynical. And don't you understand? It's so easy to be cynical. There's so many people that blow hard about the truth they're telling, but in the end, they're profiting from it. And Pilate, he's seen those religious leaders who were all about so-called truth. And so he's like, yeah, I've heard truth from this. And so what is truth? Pilate was, again, not naive. He was a hardened politician. Lies and deception are a lot of times a part of the way. So he saw through it. Jesus says something really interesting here. I mean, sometimes politicians or religious institutions may say the same thing, but everyone on the side of the truth listens to me. Now, one of the problems that Jesus had here with Pilate and with the religious leaders is that they'd already chosen sides. And when you've already chosen a side, if a truth comes in that works against your side, a lot of times you just throw it out because it becomes about protecting your side that you have. I mean, history's shown this, politics, church, something that comes in and it's true, there's a need to cover it up because that truth may impact your institution, whether it be political, religious. So there's a cover-up to protect institutions and convince others that I'm the one who's right, not the others. So again, it's I think, obvious to us who live in this society where lies are still super common, why he would think, what is truth? Now, Jesus was not naive about lying. He's not just a dove who just saw everything was awesome and everybody was perfect. Jesus knew lies. Israel's whole religious and political history had so much to do with lies that people told, and there's so much problems. He knew firsthand how there's a human tendency to exchange the truth of God for a lie when a lie can profit. He knew that. His comments expose ways, again, that people easily get entangled in lies. Yet, Jesus was not cynical. Jesus still believed that some people are on the side of the truth. Now, they took the mob, the crowds were against him. They stirred up the anger with lies, the propaganda. But Jesus really believed that some people are on the side of the truth, and that that whoever listens to the truth will be on his side, will listen to his voice. So to be clear, before we move on, I am not saying that the truth is on my side. It is not. I'm saying that Jesus said, I believe Jesus, who said it's good to be on the side of the truth. The truth is really on no one's side. The truth is the truth. And the question is, are we going to be on the side of the truth or not, even if the truth isn't on our side? So let's look at another thing that Jesus said about his voice. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. Now, this is written after the ascension. When Jesus, though, was talking about his voice, he wasn't talking about his physical voice. This was something that I copied from that we read in our Hearing God plan last night. And I just wanted to read it because I think it speaks into how it's not an original idea to think of a voice as more than sound and words from a mouth and sound in the ears. So Psalm 19 says this, the heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the ends of the world. Now this morning, Jesus said that there's a way that his sheep will listen to his voice. Now, if there's a part of you right now that's thinking, man, I can recognize that I'm not always on the side of the truth and I want to, there's good news. We can always repent. We can always be people who turn toward truth. Jesus claimed to be the way and the truth and the life. The Gospel of John is the one who recorded it. The way, the truth, and the life. He said, no one comes to the Father except through him. And I believe that. Do you believe it? Now, if you believe and you want to come to Christ, if you want to come and become his follower, you can. No one can stop you other than yourself. Jesus claimed that whoever believes will have life. You can believe and listen to his voice. But the thing is, you get to choose. You choose. Now, another weird story. 10 years ago, the state pastor spoke to Jenny and I, and he asked if we would be open to leaving Frankfort to come to a church in Indianapolis, this one. We prayed about it. No voice. We didn't have any sort of direction one way or the other. We didn't know. We didn't feel like God was telling us stay or go, and it was confusing. Not only that, but the chairperson at the church in Indianapolis did not have God speak to them while making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Do you know how I know that? The chairperson at the church in Indianapolis has never even eaten a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. God cannot talk to people like that. No one was hearing God's voice, though. I had a young family. That decision was going to move and leave what we had to another place. That was going to affect us tremendously. And it was going to impact people at both congregations to some degree. I thought that I wanted something clear from God, and I was not getting it. So I talked to my state pastor about it, and he told me a story about one time where he was thinking about maybe leaving, and he prayed, and he said, no voice. He said, I got nothing from God. And he said, I felt like the silence was God saying, you get to choose. You choose. Man, sometimes I don't want to choose. I just want God to tell me what to do. I mean, I make a lot of bad choices, especially a big choice. I don't want to choose. You choose. Even maybe that quiet, unspoken message was, you get to choose. I'm not telling you. And I wanted something to get us some assurance, and I didn't get it, and I think he's right. Because I used to think that talking to God is like GPS, where you get turn-by-turn navigation. God, where do I go? Like, God won't even do that sometimes for the big decisions. And it can be so frustrating. I used to think it was because there was something wrong with me, because, like, I wasn't good enough, or I wasn't, like, something wrong with me. But the Lord's been showing me it's not, because it's not the way that God does it. There's not even evidence that Paul and Peter got those frequent, or even Jesus got those frequent turn-by-turn directions. That part of it is the silence, and even the sound of silence, God may be speaking. God may be speaking sometimes even his confidence in you to be able to make the choice yourself. Because I think that God is more concerned with our character and our choices we make than our compliance. And reading this chapter has helped me maybe to see why. One of the things that Dallas Willard says is, a redemptive community consists not of robots, but of mature people who know how to live together and who know how to live with God. We are not making robots who sing, clap. Oh, but last week I noticed we're really bad at clapping too. So thank you, God. You're not trying to do this. Give, show up for meetings when they are supposed to. We're bringing forth the sons and daughters of God who to live their unique lives in the world, to this world, to his glory. And I say to that, amen. As we close, let's listen to one more, and the worship team can come on up. Listen to this. This is from John 2. In another letter that he wrote, he said, see what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are. You are not a robot. You're a child of God, a son or daughter of God. That's what we are, and God will treat us like that. So lean into that identity as a child of God. Don't forget it. By all means, talk to God, listen to God. If you think he's saying, act on it. Even if there's no voice, always be on the side of the truth. Keep choosing what is true, choosing what is good, because our choices are building our character. But we get to choose as the sons and daughters of God. There's some choices we get. Let me close with this blessing. May the God of all hope fill you with all joy and peace and believing, so that through the power of the Holy Spirit, you may abound in hope.